हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओके सो भक्ति संदर्भ अध्याय 1 आदिकाण्ड 4 भक्ति इज सुपीरियर टू ऑल अदर साधनास सो ऑन पेज 28 Okay, so he's okay, so he's established that you do that you never give up deity worship, so that's always done. So we can see is that the pancharatric elements, because they are also paravidya, they don't have to be given up. Just like as we see is that you're going through the varnashram system, so then one is, you know, the beginning one's varni, that he's learning the basis for being established in any of the varnas, right, as a brahmachari. Then having been trained in that, then he takes on the grihastha life. That's where then the actual practice of the particular varna is then applied, right? Before that, it's just a mood and having that, developing that mood of surrender and everything like that. But then it comes to the point where then one takes it up practically. That is one's occupation. Then one goes on, vanaprastha, then he's following in that point because it still has an advantage. The varna still has an advantage in that people tend to look in that way, right? Those who are in the grihastha ashram tend to look from the angle of the varnas, right? It means ashram, of course, also, but I'm saying the varna element will be there. So your prestige in society is depending on what service you're doing. As it's not as much the devotion. Of course, those that have more devotion, that will be recognized. But, you know, it needs to be quite obvious and all that. And then people appreciate that and that goes on. So then that's a very good thing. But other than that, then generally, because devotion is manifest through the particular service you're doing. So the mechanics of the service, that's what's given the respect more than the devotion, right? For you know, for the neophyte. So that's what the whole idea is, the deity worship is to overcome that, right? So the pancharatric system is a transcendental system. So therefore, it's for overcoming these lower levels of consciousness that the neophyte may have, right? So because in the Vedic system, that someone's a neophyte, you're trying to take them beyond. But much of the time, their advancement is dependent upon the ashram that they're in. And so then, you know, the varna becomes very important for the first three stages. But the pancharatra, it's some, and they could remain neophyte, right? So even though they may give up these different positions, give up varna and all these, they still may maintain that neophyte mentality where they don't necessarily see everyone equally and all that. But then by then following up to the sannyasa ashram, then when they're giving up the aspect of ashram, then, you know, the sannyasa can still maintain that. Then they go beyond that, like you see, you know, Durvasa is very renounced and all that, but still maintaining this difference in being involved in the political platform. But then you see when they go beyond that, they give up the ashram aspect. And so, but, you know, one technically shouldn't be, to give that up, one has to be moving beyond that to a platform where one sees all living entities equally. Then that's a proper, you know, as Krishna says in the Gita, that's a stage. You know, the proper stage he sees like that. So you can see it's very much part of the Vedic system, but here you have to wait all the way basically till sannyas for it to become, you know, very much part of the practice, Right? Before that, it should be that it's there, but one may not practice, right? Just like the brahmachari may study and focus on that. The grihastha vanaprastha, you know, may or may not. You know, they should, but they may not. But at least in the brahmachari, you focused on that, so you have a habit. And then if you appreciated it, it's natural to carry it on to the vanaprastha, the grihastha ashram. Then a grihastha ashram, then giving in charity, trying to share things, care for others and all that, that should be there. It's the focus, right? And maintaining other living entities. Then when it gets to vanaprastha, it's natural that that would carry on. You can go back to the studying again, you know, as a major function. You're caring for other living entities, but instead of it just simply being the aspect of taking care of their facility and charity and those kind of things, it's about giving them the spiritual understanding, right? So therefore, then the vanaprasthas then have a very good position to preach to and train the grihasthas, because much of the time there's always the things in the grihastha ashram. And when you're dealing in that aspect of the whole dynamics that are there, there's going to be the element of thinking that, well, unless someone's doing this themselves, they can't understand what I'm going through. My position is the most unique and that in the world. Therefore, everything going wrong, no one else can understand it except for someone else in my position, right? So therefore, then the vanaprastha, that they're still basically connected to the grihastha ashram, they've been through, generally speaking. So there's going to be more of an option, more of an opportunity that the grihastha ashrams in general, the grihastha community in general, respect them, that yes, they've been through it, they've had children, they've raised their children, they've done all these different things, so therefore then they can take care, or in some way they've been involved in the grihastha ashram, so therefore they can give some insight into what we're doing. Otherwise, no one else can, because we're just so special and unique. So that overcomes that. That's why then, they have that aspect. But at the same time, as I'm a Brahmin, you know, how can someone else other than the Brahmin instruct me? Because, you know, in the Varna is that I'm so superior in that. So therefore, then the Vanaprastha still have that aspect of Varna. They don't give it up. Because as a Vanaprastha, they're a Brahmin. Therefore, they can talk to others. They'll listen, or they're a Kshatriya. And that, okay, you're a grihastha, you can understand what I go through, but, you know, as a Kshatriya, and then we have to know, but they're Kshatriya. Or they're a Brahmin, so it's higher. Right? So that whole idea is that the Varna still has an advantage for the Vanaprastha because of the field in which they're preaching. Right? Then you have then the sannyas, then it goes, it gives up the aspect of Varna. And then only has the aspect of ashram that they're performing these duties. And there, because then there's, you know, the sadhu and that, they're seeing all living entities equally. No one feels that there's any problem there, because otherwise that's, you know, if you're in somehow another junior, you won't understand, but here it's obviously senior because you're looking at it from all living entities are equal, right? And so that then gives up the point that someone will be taking advantage. So then that's their advantage there. But then they, you know, don't get so involved in people's lives like that. And so then that's there. So this whole system is there. But we see, as the point has been made, but deity worship is never given up. So even though the Varna and Ashram elements may be given up as one advances, the deity worship is not. That's done through the whole life. So we see, as even though the six Goswamis had given up, you know, the elements of Varna and Ashram, but that their deity worship was still going on. They were still involved in their deity worship. So the Pancharatrik always remains, right? So that point is there. So we can see is that, yeah. So that part's not going to be given up. So that therefore the Pancharatrik program that we have, you know, the worship of the deity, the festivals, all these different things, they're very much part of. In fact, you know, Rupa Goswami gives them as a major part of the 64 items of devotional service. So that will always remain, right? And so then he says, now you're supposed to always do the worship. That means then it has to be there. So forming the worship then, One has to be merciful to all living entities, right? So if you're not merciful to other living entities, one's still neophyte. One, that means that one still hasn't properly come to the platform of what do you call it? Getting full benefit of what is there in the deity worship, that you come to the mentality to see everyone is connected to Krishna, right? So then the point goes on, and then now to where we are now. The person sees difference between his own and others' bellies. He does not see equally with the Lord in every being. He thinks only of his own stomach when he feels hunger. For the person who sees difference, I as death, give frightening samsara, bhayam. This is further explained. So this is basically the acharya's, you could say, translation with, you know, combined with, a explanation from the Bhagavatam verse 3:29-26. In the form of death, I give great fear to the person who makes distinction between his own belly and the bellies of others. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:29-26. Right? So there has to be, the whole point is that, So then there's that, this is the etiquette. So then this is explained in, further in, Bhagavatam 3:29-27. That was 26 before. Atamam sarva bhuteshu bhutan manam kritalayam arhayet dana manabhyam maitriya bhinena chakshusha. On the other hand, they should worship me, the soul in all beings, who have taken shelter in all beings, with gifts and respect, treating all beings as equal friends. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:29-27. Right, so you're supposed to see the super soul is in all living entities. That's why then one you're respecting at least from there, but two, you also see the living entities as equal, because it's not the body that makes the distinction between living entities. It may make a distinction how you're dealing with the living entity, you know, in etiquette, but it doesn't mean that you're making any distinction between oneself and other souls like that. That's there. For this reason, to the best of one's ability, by giving, and if that is not possible, by respecting, while seeing non-difference, abhinena chakshusha, they should worship me. Thus the Lord says to Shanaka, right? So, excuse me, they worship me. So that they, you know, they're giving to the best of one's ability, giving things, taking care and all that, whatever it is, but at least respecting, right? If one has nothing, or, you know, once moving through the crowd of people, you're not going to stop and give charity to everyone there. You're just going to be respectful towards them. You're going to, you know, be careful not, you know, see where they are. Don't bump into anyone. You know, if there is someone in a position that has that senior aspect to, you know, acknowledge, you know, if it's just generic and everybody's just moving, you don't look. And if you're in New York in an elevator, you still don't look, but you respect everyone's, right for privacy, even though you're all standing packed together like sardines in an elevator, and you don't acknowledge and say hello or anything like that. Don't want to create any uncomfortable position by being personal. So like that, then, you know, that's what's going on here. But at least you're respecting that super soul's in their heart. So then, thus the Lord says to Shanaka, the enraged servants of Yama, with forms like vultures, tear out the eyes of those who, with vision destroyed by sin, see difference between my forms and the Brahmanas, cows and shelterless beings. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:16-10. Right? So they're saying they rip out their eyes because your eyes are for seeing this. It means the eyes see the pratyaksha, the outside elements that is there, that is done with the senses, but that's supposed to be interpreted and understood by the internal vision, right? So the Shastra Chakshus. So through Shastra Chakshus, you're supposed to see all living entities as parts and parcel of the Lord. And so his forms, the Brahmanas, cows, and shelterless beings. So the Brahmanas are always to be respected. The cows are always to be taken care of and respected. Shelterless beings are always supposed to be given, you know, taken care of. So this is what's supposed to happen. And so if you don't see like that, then what's the point of having eyes? Right? The eyes are there to express the internal vision that's there. So if you don't have the Shastra Chakshu, so that vision, the eyes basically are useless. That is said, like they're like the eyes on the peacock feather. You know, they look very nice, but they don't actually do anything. Right? Then the Acharya continues, seeing with eyes of non-difference everywhere is the best vision. Worship while seeing all beings as equal is described while making some distinctions, right? So it's described what it means, but there has to be distinctions because there's always distinctions. When we say it's all equal, it just means everyone is equal according to their position. Right? I mean, it's just like, let's say, you have a barnyard full of animals, variety of animals. You see all the animals as equals that you're going to take care of them, you know, according to their position. Krishna's in their heart. They're all certain servants of Krishna, and they, you know, somehow or another as animals, then as a servant, as animals, they can do their various services for Krishna. But there's still distinction because you're going to feed the cows one thing, the goats might get something else, you know, the birds get something else, you know, everybody gets something according to their nature. So there is distinction, though it's all equal. You have to see the principle is equal, but the application is different. Just like all pots in the kitchen are equal, but you deal with them differently, or all vegetables are equal, but you deal with them differently. Right, so the principle of that you're dealing with them according to their nature, that is equal vision. These other visions, these are just sentimental things that are misunderstanding, misapplying the philosophy for some particular ideological gain. Right. So the distinctions here: living immobile entities are superior to withered ones. Right, so ones that are immovable, but the ones that have dried up, you know, or withered, superior to them are entities with greater life symptoms. Superior to them are entities with higher consciousness, right? Greater life symptoms, that they move more, because you see is what's the greater life symptoms, because the immovable living entities, they can only perceive the six changes, right? Birth, growth, maintenance, reproduction, dwindling, death. Right? So therefore, the ones that are dwindling, they're not as good as the ones that are doing well. Right? Because, like, let's say you go into your garden to pick something for the deities, like, let's say, flowers. You're going to pick the nice flowers, you know, that are fresh, not the withered ones. You can't say, oh, but they're all equal, and so we'll give, like, no. You take these ones. Right? There is distinction. Right, so they can only see these six. While superior to them are entities with greater life symptoms. It means they have those six, and they understand eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's how they perceive. The other ones are there in the background, of course. They're part of the scene, but they're all part of the greater one of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Right, and then superior to them are entities with higher consciousness and movement. Right? So it just keeps going up, how you go here. Oh, okay. Here. Unto his higher consciousness and movement. Superior to the entity with senses such as... Okay. Udriti, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Unlike the jnani, my devotee does not have to see everything completely with equal vision, but with gradations. 6.5 verses show the gradations of living entities. Right? The jnani is just seeing everyone the same. They don't make any distinctions. That's where all these Mayavadis make their mistakes, or Buddhists, or others, or even those working on these kind of more inclusive social ideological platforms. They try to see everything equal. They make no distinction, but at the same time, as you see, they all make distinctions. Superior to non-living entities like withered grass are living entities like fresh grass. Superior to them are beings with active prana situated on earth, forms with intake and expelling of water, such as living stones. Superior to them are conscious mountains with ears and teeth, which in the beginnings had movements such as flying, but were stunned by Indra's thunderbolt. Superior to them are entities with senses. This indicates trees which have awareness of sprouting and seeing. In Moksha Dharma, it is said that seeing means that beings. Prabhupada points out is that he shows the superior that of the tree. I mean, I means in the intelligence of the tree is when it's growing, it can tell where there's something like, you know, under the roof, and it'll grow around that, or it's find another tree and it'll grow in a different direction. So they can see. It may not be as developed as our sight, but they can tell where there's light, sun, and where there's not. Right? So if you've ever seen a picture, sometimes you see pictures of where they've taken, from an aerial view, probably from a drone or that, of a forest of trees, or like a park, or out in the actual forest itself, where there's no wind, and the trees are all there. And you see there, you know, they're all basically all right next to each other. But you'll see there is a little gap, not much, but there's a gap between the leaves of one tree and another. There's an actual full-on gap. The other tree doesn't go past that because they can sense that, you know, there's not the place. So even though they're not, you see is that each tree, there's a gap outlining each individual tree. So it's very interesting. So that's because they can see. They can tell where there's light and where there's not. They may not be able to tell forms, but they can tell that much, right? In Moksha Dharma, it said, Tasmat Pashyanti Padapas Tasmaj Jigranti Padapa. Higher than these are the trees which see, higher than these are the trees which smell. Sardartha Darshani 3:29-28. Right? So then you have those, and those ones that have a nice fragrance and all that. So as you go up, it's showing that there's gradation. So the living entities, we can see that. The jnanis, they're just on the basic platform of working on everything, the existence of things. Just everything exists. And therefore, all existence, because it's all Brahman, it must all be respected, right? That's a proper jnani. The Mayavadis are not actually proper jnanis. They follow the lifestyle of a jnani, so therefore they're given that respect of that detachment, knowledge, and renunciation. But actually, they're not properly, really properly situated, because they're supposed to, it's not an illusion. It's all Brahman, therefore it's all there, and you deal properly and don't disturb any other living entity. But as a jnani, since you have nothing to gain, therefore you don't have to interact basically with anybody. You just, you know, avoid and just don't, you know, respect their existence. But you see is what he's taking the devotees. Then the devotee does not have to see everything completely with equal vision. He can make the distinction because he's going to interact with each different kind of living entity according to their position of service to Krishna, right? So he's going to see the Lord, he's going to see the devotees, he's going to see the juniors, he's going to see the, you know, our innocents, he's going to see those who are inimical towards Krishna consciousness. Right, he's going to, you know, in this way, he's going to see the various things of who's situated where in Varna and Ashram, and accordingly by etiquette deal with them. You know, same with the animals, all this. So that kind of distinction then is fine. Okay, so then here we're going is that superior to withered ones, right? So living entities that were there, that are dead, then ones are better. Superior entities are greater life systems, symptoms like that. Active prana. Situated on earth with intake and expelling of water, such as living stones. So it seems living stones, then they drink water and expel water, you know, so that's how they live. Those mountains with ears and teeth, so it appears mountains can hear, they have teeth, you know, like that. But they could fly, so the thunderbolt, you know, cut off their wings, they don't fly, but it doesn't mean they don't have ears and teeth, you know, so. It appeared to them entities with senses. Indicates trees which have awareness of sprouting and seeing, right? So when it sprouts, it's aware. Living, you know, you soak the seed and it starts to, you know, sprout. It's aware and it gets, you know, it comes awake. It gets enthusiastic, starts to grow like that. Then in the next verse, then I think these are these must be a run of Bhagavatam verses. Yeah, 28 through 33. Then superior to trees with touch sensation are beings with taste sensation, right? So then our, with senses, as trees, they can see, they can smell. Now they can say with touch, right? Then it's taste. Superior to them are living entities with a sense of smell, and superior to them are living entities that can hear. Udriki. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, those with taste sensation, conscious of what is suitable or unsuitable in food, such as worms, are superior to the trees with touch sensation. Entities with a sense of smell, such as small insects and flowers, are superior again. Superior to them are entities who protect themselves by hearing, such as some water insects. Sardar Darshani 329.29. So these are the ways that the Vedas break up the living entities. Right? So this is there. You see Bhagavatam then mentions, you know, these different things are like those with five toes or other things, because you may not be able to always tell what has what. You know, so these are the ways they're classified, because the whole idea of the universe is elevation of consciousness. So that's then what you're dealing with. So we see within the worms and insects, then those insects are those, you know, moving living entities that have that sense of, what would he say here? Sense of smell, like the small insects and flowers, like the bees and that, they're superior to the worms. Even though they're all in, you know, all in the same category, they're all in that group of, you know, worms like that. So whether they're like the little protozoas or this or that. So there's a general thing that they have movement. They're superior to ones that don't have movement, but you see is they're not necessarily superior in the way of what they have in perception. Like the tree may have more perception than like a protozoa or something. So, you know, so you're looking about the consciousness elements that are there, but there's, you know, a general thing of consciousness. So these different categories to understand how it's the consciousness, that's the important. When you deal with 8,400,000, it's the consciousness that's important, because human life, it's meant for that. But if you're looking at just simply eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and that's all like the animals, then you may use the modern technical biological basis for, you know, grouping the animals and all that. And they say, yes, this is it. And then you come back after 10, 20 years and an animal that was in this group or phylum or whatever it is moves over to this one and this moves there. And this one used to be the ancestor, but now it's not. That one's the ancestor. It's constantly changing. So even though they're very proud of their science and all that, it's always changing. So the Vedas give this. You know, because this is the important point, you know, how it moves up. And then next verse, entities which can distinguish form are superior, right? So the trees can tell, can see, but it's only light. They can't tell form. Superior to them are entities with two sets of teeth, right? Because some just have one. Or, you know, no teeth. Superior to them are beings with many legs. Superior to them are animals with four legs. Superior to them are humans with two legs. So you see it moves up like this. Udriti, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Beings who can distinguish forms, such as crows, are superior. Entities with upper and lower teeth, such as snakes, are superior. Those with many legs, such as bees, are superior. But it should be understood that they have two sets of teeth since they can cut flowers or wood, right? So they may, their teeth may be this way, but it's two. There's some teeth, right? You know, like crows, they don't have teeth. They have their beak, but they don't have teeth. So here's that you have somehow or another, you get up. Four-legged animals are superior, and two-legged humans are beings are superior to them. Those beings latter in the list are in general superior because of superior quality. General, because sometimes there's overlapping, because someone might have consciousness that has a bit of this and a bit of that, so there'll be something in between. You'll always have, you know, like a cheetah. It's categorized basically within the cats, because generally it acts more like a cat, but its actual physical structure and how it runs and that's actually like a dog. So they're basically, you could say, half cat, half dog. Mentality of a cat, but actually physical attributes of a dog, right? You know, maybe, you know, the what do you call it? Physical meaning and bone structure. You know, outside they look like a cat, but inside it's like a dog. So you're going to get those kind of things. Those beings, okay. By knowledge from scriptures, it is understood that mountains like Govardhan and Venkatachala and plants like Tulsi are superior and are more worthy of respect because of even greater qualities, such as residing at the Lord's abode, Sardarta Darshan 3:29-30. Because otherwise you may say, oh, okay, that's all that, we're humans, but then Govardhan, Venkatachala, and Tulsi, how can we worship them? Because they're on the lower on the list. But then higher than just having two legs is they have knowledge of scriptures. You know, I say, and by knowledge from scriptures, we can understand. Right, so they have greater qualities because he sees all the nice qualities that Govardhan has, Tulsi has, and they live in the Lord's abode. So then, so the one doesn't make a mistake thinking that, you know, Tulsi is just a plant. So we as humans are superior. No, she lives in the Lord's abode. So therefore, that's a different thing. We're not living there right now, right? Among the humans, those within the Varnashram are superior, right? So those outside are going to be less. They're two-legged. So they're human form of life, but until they get to Varnashram, they don't take on a superior thing. So this idea, we're Westerners, we don't need Varnashram. Then you're just saying we're Westerners and we don't have the piety or the superior intelligence or qualities to function at a superior human position. So philosophically, okay, we appreciate Krishna consciousness, but religiously, we just can't deal with it. So that's a lesser position. So then you see is like those in the fifth canto, then those Kinaras and other like that, they're animals that, you know, they know the scriptures, worship the Lord and all that. They're half human, half animal. So basically, these are just lesser of that kind of position. Is they can appreciate the philosophy, but they can't, they don't know all these other things, so they still basically live like animals. Among the Varnas, the Brahmins are the best. Among the Brahmins, one who knows the Vedas is superior. Amongst the knowledgeable Brahmins, one who knows the meaning of the Vedas is superior, right? So it keeps going up. Notice it would be interesting that if we're talking about the superiority of from the living entities up to the humans, all these verses, even someone who is, you know, has a social ideology of equality won't have a problem with this. Right? They can say, yes, okay, yeah, that makes sense, yeah, like that. But then when you come to the humans, then you say among humans, then Varna, oh, wait, slow down there. Among the Varnas, the Brahmins, oh, that's even more of a problem. Among the Brahmins, no, so the Vedas, why the Vedas? You know, I have a PhD in, you know, underwater basket weaving, you know, why is he superior? And then one who knows the meanings of the Vedas is kind of like conclusions. What do we need those for? We're just here to speculate. So this is where your problem will start. So they don't mind making distinction, even though they say everything's equal. But they'll make distinction here. So then you understand it's an ideology. It's not intelligence that's seeing the difference. It's not based on the Vedas. And so therefore, this is how we see the difference. It's based just on the sense perception and how they socially see what benefits they'll get from society. So this is where then those philosophies break down. So at this point, then this is the breakdown of any of those, Vaishnava philosophies that are mixed with, you know, these modern socialistic philosophies or whatever else that they may be, hedonism, this, that. So they become aparasampradayic. They're not actually getting knowledge from the Veda, right? Artha, gyat, samshayach, cheta, tata, shreyan, svakaramakrit. Mukta sangas tato bhuyan adogdha dharmam atmanaha. Better than the knower of the meaning of the Vedas is the Brahmana who can cut doubts, right? You know the meaning yourself, you know that, but you don't know how to discuss it. So you don't know how to, you don't know how to explain it to others to clear their doubts. So in other words, at least Shastrically, that would be considered a neophyte. They can't present the philosophy and clear people's doubts, right? So this is someone who can clear doubts. So he has that. He may have that faith. He follows it himself, but he doesn't know how to clear doubts, right? Better than one who cuts doubts is the Brahmin who also performs his duties completely, right? It's not that he just is studying and all that. Yes.
Like also one who cuts doubts means he can resolve contradictions, means it's an aspect where he can see everything together.
Yes. Nice. Okay, so you can see the two, sees what's the common point. Yeah, it's not a matter of doubt. This is very good, because otherwise you could say doubts means just logical presentation. You clear doubts, you know, by rhetoric. But here it's that you resolve issues. So that means it's not a matter of compromise. Well, he wants this and you want that. We'll meet in the middle. No, that's just mundane. We're talking about this person is looking from this angle, that one angle. What's the common point? What are they trying to get? This one's applied that common principle in this way, and that one, in that way. But the point is there's a tradition how to apply that. And so since they're both looking for the same thing, then they can, the common ground is that common principle that they're looking at. And then you have the tradition on how to apply it, because otherwise one's attached to this, one's attached to that. So giving up that attachment, one can then follow the tradition. Is that good? Yes, okay. Better still is the jnani who does not enjoy the results of his previous actions of dharma, right? So it's not about I've done for myself. So even though he knows all this, but you can see he may be involved in the results of his pious actions, right? So you have so many examples where someone's acting on that platform of karma, you know, like that, like Sukracharya, you know, with the demigods and all that. I mean, with the demons. And so Bali Maharaj is there. There's the sacrifice. So then, When Vamanadeva comes, then Sukracharya recommends don't get involved with this little Brahmin boy. But then he's thinking, no, but I've been trained to, you know, we always must respect, we must give in charity. And so then he gives, you know, and then the Lord, you know, has tricked him and has taken everything. And that, and then after all this and revealing the point how Krishna gives, takes away everything for the sincere devotee. And then as they advance more, then everything can, so much can be given back, because it'll all be used for Krishna. So when it, you might be the chance that having more, you'll use it for yourself. It's things are taken away. But when you get to the point where it doesn't matter what it is, it'll always be used for Krishna. Then accordingly, one can have so much or have nothing, you know, whatever is going to be best for the, you know, establishing, the Lord's, mission. All right. And so yeah, we see that goes on. So then Vamanadeva asks Sukracharya about that. And he says, no, actually, surrendering everything for the Lord is the perfection. So he knows, but it's not necessarily, he's necessarily applying that in his own life or that circle he's in. But he knows it. But he's dealing with the demons. And of course, they generally speaking, can't tolerate losing their material facilities. That's why they're demons. That's why they're there on those lower planets, is to enjoy more facility. So he's protecting them from that. But then we see is that, you know, so that mentality is then higher than that, is one who doesn't act on that kind of platform. Tasman mayar pita shesha kri kriyar tat ma nirantaraha mayar pitat mana pumso mai sanyasta karamanaha napashyami param bhutam akartusama darshanat. Superior to the jnani is the person who fully dedicates his activities, such as hearing and chanting, his wealth, his identity, his mind, and his intelligence to me. right? So everything. So identity means we're saying, okay, we're in human form of life. We're in, you know, masculine or feminine. We're in this varna or this ashram. You know, we're doing these particular duties within our varna or ashram. I'm doing this kind of thing or that kind of thing. The identity, you know, that we always say, oh, this is me. No, that's an identity that me works through. Right? When someone says, oh, but, you know, I'm this kind of a person, so that's me. No, that's what you work through. Just like, let's say you're walking with a friend down the street. And you get to where your house is, and then I don't know if they still use it, before they had the thing where they say, okay, this is me, meaning this is my house. And then they go off to go to their house, and the friend keeps walking to wherever they go. So this idea, they're identifying me with the external, just like you've done it with the body, then they also extend it with the identity of that body, so that false ego, and then it is there. So this means is that any of those, that identity of whatever the position, that's engaged in Krishna's service. So that's where the equality comes in. That's where all these nice qualities come up. It's because everything's seen in connection with Krishna. So whatever one has, it's being used properly. You know, his activities are perfect because it's always for Krishna. His like hearing and chanting is perfect for Krishna's wealth because it's for Krishna's identity, for Krishna, mind intelligence for Krishna, right? And then continues here. I do not see a greater living entity than this person who has offered himself to me, giving up all varnashram actions, who thinks that the Lord alone inspires his bhakti, and who identifies with others' happiness and distress. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:29-28-33. So giving up. Who thinks the Lord alone inspires his bhakti, right? Because otherwise you think, yes, if I do this particular action, yes, I'm managing and all that, then I'll be inspired in service for Krishna. Or I'm doing intellectual work, I don't have to do all this other physical work, then I can do things for Krishna. Or yes, I'm making money and all that, so I'm inspired and I do all that for Krishna. Or yes, I'm expressing myself through my particular skills and all that, so I'm inspired, I have that opportunity. So that's where you're engaging through religion. You become inspired to do something, and then you do that. It's for Krishna, or it's going to be given to Krishna after, right? It's your work. Then you give it to, I did my work. I got my results, but I give those to Krishna. I'm renounced. So that's good. Better than that is, oh, it's Krishna's work, but it's what I prefer, right? But then he's taking here is that the Lord alone inspires his bhakti. It's because of Krishna. I want to please Krishna. Then, wanting to do that, then how do I do that? I engage all these different things, the identity, the wealth, the intelligence, the mind, activities, hearing and chanting for Krishna. Right? So in other words, you're taking one and then taking that to Krishna. The other one, starting at Krishna and then engaging these. So that's the difference. Externally, they'll look the same. There may be a little less emphasis on certain details that are, authorized to perform within the varna and ashram, but are not necessarily important in the devotional expression. Right? So you might find a difference there. Those things may be given up. Okay, then the Acharya continues. The latter living entities are superior to the previous by the addition of an extra quality. Adhogha dharma means a person performing nishkam karma. Nishkam karma. Means it's without that attachment, without it being for yourself. So adogdha means, means you have, this is just a play on words here. You have their dog. So adog means not dog. So that not dog-like dharma then means nishkam karma yoga. Right? Nirantara means bhakti without obstacles of jnana. Right? So it's not that they get caught up on that. That is the devotion. It's the devotion there. So it's not that the jnana is what is inspiring them. You know, so it's not the fruits of the result. It's not the results of those things. Or you want to get this and that. Oh, I don't want to get involved. I have the knowledge, but I don't want to get involved. That's too much, you know, how you say, complication or entanglement or things. No, it's just service to Krishna. What is available for you in your position like that? This person is called a non-doer, akar tuhu, since he does not think of karma as his responsibility, having offered himself to the Lord. He is devoid of identity as an independent agent. So he only understands himself as servant of Krishna, servant of the servant of the servant. Right? Gopi Bhartuf, Padakamalayor, Dasa, Dasa, Anu, Dasa, Ha. Right? Understanding that his activities of bhakti are dependent on the Lord. They're dependent on the Lord, not dependent upon the situation. Notice things, oh no, but if we do these things, let's say, you know, we distribute food because it's charity and food and all that, then people will like us. No, we distribute food because it's what Krishna likes. He wants to see all living entities fed and all that. That's why we're distributing prasad. We're not distributing as a charity thing, you know, as a clever thing just to get attention of others and get money and things like that and get respect. No, we're doing it because it pleases Krishna. Oh, if you know, if we all deal like this and we all follow these, you know, modern social rules, then we'll be successful in Krishna consciousness. No, we do what we do because it pleases Krishna. So we can see is that there's a complete switch in this. So these other elements, I'll say, is preaching, but it's actually symptoms of a lower level of consciousness, because you saw Prabhupada didn't have to do that to preach. He did what he did. You can say, oh, but that's Indian, it doesn't work in this society. Prabhupada, by preaching in his Indian, so-called Indian stuff, all the devotees that nowadays may be complaining about that were made devotees by that so-called what we don't need. Because Prabhupada is just trying to please Krishna, please his guru. That's the whole basis. These other things are actually symptoms of lower level of consciousness, not of, oh, yukta vairagya and we're so advanced. And no, you're actually of lower consciousness. You don't know what yukta vairagya is. Yukta means it's about Krishna. And vairagya means it's not for me, it's for Krishna. You know, you can mechanically do that lower. It's okay, I try to do everything for Krishna. So nishkam karma yoga, that's for it's for Krishna. But then higher, it's just Krishna inspires, right? Oh, but you know, Krishna, you know, then you're saying Krishna has to come and tell me. No, it's just a matter of you just see that I want to please Krishna by doing this. Like that. It's that thing. He sees the Lord in all beings as also in himself. Samadarshanat, right? You see all in living, but you have to see in yourself as well. So if you're saying, I can't see like that, do you see the Lord in yourself? That he's sitting in the heart, he's always with you? So when you see that, then you can see in all other living entities. You know, or you're trying to see there, and then, oh, okay, you have to see. But point is, it is, he's in your heart, he's in everyone's heart. You can perceive him in your heart, you can perceive him in others. You can't perceive in your own, you won't perceive in others, right? Thus, he thinks of benefiting others. Living beings are superior to non-living entities since they can perform actions like hearing. Highest respect should be given to the devotees. Respect is given to others as much as possible and when available. Right, as much as possible, what is appropriate and with what's available, you know. Like that. So it means there may be an ideal. If you have it, you use it. If not, you use it as best you can. Then the next verse. Manasaitani bhutani praname bahu manayan ishvaro jiva kalaya pravishto bhagavan iti. He should offer great respects within the mind to all living entities, thinking that the Supreme Lord has entered that entity as Antaryami. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:29-34. Right? So he's mentioning to all living entities. He's not saying that it's just to the super souls, because the super soul, you're saying super soul is entered with the living entity. Why is the Lord there? Because the living entity is there. And when the Lord leaves that body, the living entity goes with him. Right? So it's you're respecting the living entity because super soul is with him. Not that, oh, we're just respecting super soul in the body. No, because super soul is there, we're respecting the living entity with super soul. Right? Does that make sense? That the aspect of, because sometimes they say, oh, we're respecting the living entity. So then, you know, them, their body, how they identify, that's the whole thing. Because they think like, no, that's the etiquette how we deal. Right? That's not about the living entity. Because living entity is separate from all that. Then you can say, oh, we respect all because super soul is there. It has nothing to do with the soul. Like that. They're just conditioned, you know, living entities and, you know, nonsense. No, because the Lord has come with the living entity. Even though the living entity has left Krishna, Krishna has come with him and it's in his heart to always be with him wherever they go. Right? So you have to see the two go together. The Lord and the devotee, the Lord and his energies, they go together. They're not separate. Right? You know, this, you know, but different, you different, but you know that non-difference. Okay, that's the next one. 329.34. Jiva Kalaya means as the cause of the jiva. Antaryami. Thus, respect for all beings is prescribed for initial worshippers. Worshippers with faith, however, see the manifestation of Lord's quality of compassion spread everywhere. Okay, so there's just seeing is that the living entity is here and the super soul is there, but then with faith, then see the manifestation of Lord's quality of compassion, right? Because there's the aspect of friendship with the living entities. But the point is that friendship is there when they're all working on that same transcendental position, right? Otherwise, compassion is there because then the living entity isn't on that natural position, right? In the conditional state, generally it's compassion. On the spiritual platform, then it's friendship, right? So because of friendship with the other living entities, he sees all as equal, but it is that compassion he's going to deal, because otherwise some will see that they're all equal, but doesn't necessarily do anything to benefit others, right? Like they may be jnanis and renounced, so they don't have anything, but it's not that they're trying to improve the quality of consciousness of these other living entities. Thus it is said in Skanda Purana, your quality of nonviolence is not astonishing. Those who worship the Lord with bhakti do not disturb other beings. Right? So this whole thing of being nonviolent, the point is if you have bhakti, you don't disturb others. You know, so that's the thing is those who are deal badly with others, and then people who deal badly with those people because of that, it's not the element of compassion. They don't disturb other living entities. Right? Krishna is going to take care. It means if you're in a position, okay, the king, he has to take care of people who are so in that position of authority where they have to, they can correct and chastise and make adjustments for that. Then that's done. Then, Acharya continues, the quality of being friendly to all beings manifests in the devotees by remembering this quality in the Lord. Following the conduct of the people of Gokula who have perfect, pure friendship, those with bhava naturally have nonviolence and detachment. That is shown in the following, right? So you're going up, so we see is that there's that unique position of those on the platform of bhava, or at least where it's starting, you start to see that taste, that's where you're going to see these manifest. From when they have ruchi, you know, and the sakti, it'll be more. Then with bhava, it's nicely manifest. Then and naturally, it continues developing until prema. With that aspect of that, they appreciate that relationship with the Lord. That is shown in the following quote. From Bhagavatam, the devotees who are attached to Krishna, immediately giving up strong attachment to body and other material objects, attain the highest stage of light, Paramahamsa, in which lack of hatred And absorption in Krishna are the natural qualities, right? They don't have any hatred for others because they're doing, because it's not the, as Krishna said in the Gita, the living entity isn't actually doing that. They just are interested in material, you know, material consciousness and that experience. And then the modes of nature carry all these things out for them. They're willing to take part in all. So technically they're not doing, they're just foolishly going along. They're suffering, others are suffering, and so like that. So then they see that they don't have, how do you call it? So there's no hatred for them because they're not technically the ones that are doing, right? Absorption in Krishna are the natural qualities because they're absorbed in Krishna. Then they don't have any, they're not disturbed with other living entities. So they deal with them, you know, in according to whatever would be the dealings according to the etiquette. And yeah. This quality is also noted in the highest devotees. Quote from Bhagavatam. The most advanced devotee sees Supreme Lord, one's object of worship, within everything, and sees everything in the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.45. Right? So they always see whatever it is. The reason is, so, okay, we see, you know, the ocean is the vibhuti of Krishna. Like that. But the point is, no, it's Krishna, his qualities that make the ocean powerful and big and, you know, moving the different waves or the wind or the aesthetic elements. They're all Krishna's element. That's why you see the gopis. When they see the tamal tree, they just see that it, that blackness, that Krishna's beauty of blackness is there in the tamal tree. That's what's there. So they see Krishna in everything. And then that way, then they become absorbed. They see always, they're always absorbed in that way. And so they may come to the platform, the Madhyama, and then be able to, you know, distinguish the different things and be absorbed in how to interact with others and express that friendship towards the other living entities. Or you may see that they may not worry about all those things and just be absorbed in Krishna. And so others might take them as being a little bit, you know, socially incompatible, right? So like that, but we see generally, we see the acharyas and all the great devotees, they come in that madhyama mood to preach so that we can always, you know, take example from them. Then, according to Srimad Bhagavatam 4.31.12, worship of devatas, like thinking they are independent, is redundant, right? So then you're going to say, if you're already seeing all living, it's redundant because you only see Krishna. Since watering the root accomplishes everything, you see that quality is there, let's say in Indra governing, but Krishna, that's Krishna's quality of governing. Krishna is controlling everything. So you just worship Krishna. So in other words, seeing Indra just reminds you of Krishna, you worship Krishna. One should worship the Lord within the devatas, right? So therefore it's the Lord within the devata that you're worshiping, not the devata, because what's manifesting is just qualities of Krishna. You know, it's just like cooking is there, it manifests through that pot. But the important point's not the pot. It's the cooking. You're not watching the pot, you're watching the cooking. You know, and using the pot, how it influences the cook, how it takes part in supporting the cooking, but it's the cooking you're watching. That there's a certain effect that is there that gives a particular, you know, taste or, you know, some element of the cooking. You're looking for that through using your pot. So it's the cooking that you're seeing, not the pot. That makes sense? And the techniques, these are the religious elements that manifest them. The devatas should be respected since they are related to the Lord. This is done in order to quickly destroy attachment and hatred towards other beings. So the idea of worshiping the demigods is to give up this attachment and hatred towards other living beings. Right? So that's just their respect. So there, you don't go out of your way. You don't start. You come across a devata, or it's say in your family tradition that you're worshiping, you know, kshatriyas, you have the temple of Devi. So then you're respecting, but you're respecting Krishna in the heart, and that they're manifesting qualities of Krishna, and that's why they're respectable. They're performing those duties. They're related to the Lord as the arms of the Lord in doing his activities. But if you're not from that kind of background, so you don't inherently have that in your house or as part of your family tradition, why would you introduce it? That's the whole point. So therefore, for the devotees that are from backgrounds that don't worship demigods, they would never even take it up. You know, for those who come from backgrounds that worship, that means it has to be authorized, not this, you know, a million devatas on the earth. It means you're following in one of these. You know, you're a Vaishnava, you're a Saurya, Ganapatya, Shaiva, or a Shakta. And these are going to be the main ways you're dealing in that. And so if that's the tradition in your house, but you as yourself, you just have to worship Krishna. But if in your house there's still members of the family that do like that, or in your community they still like that, then you're worshiping Krishna within. Is that how we do it? Okay. So then we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.